In this episode, we speak with Sean Grundy, the co-founder and CEO of Bevy. Bevy is redesigning the beverage supply chain with machines that purify water and make customized drinks in seconds. Their system vastly cuts the cost and carbon footprint of beverages. Since Bevy's inception in 2013, the company has helped thousands of organizations across North America save more than 300 million plastic bottles collectively. The company has raised over $130 million in venture capital to disrupt the bottled beverage industry. Prior to founding Bevy, Sean worked in environmental conservation at a nonprofit organization in the US and China, which shaped his commitment to creating a more sustainable future. Sean graduated from Princeton and MIT. I'm your host, RJ Lumba. We hope you enjoy the show. If you like the episode, click to follow.
RJ Lumba is the executive chairman of Market Insight Media and the managing partner of GrowthCap. He is the host of Great Entrepreneurs, a podcast for driven entrepreneurs and business owners. Our podcast covers all topics related to the entrepreneurial journey, from ideation to execution to optimization and to reaping the rewards of a well-run business. In the minutes ahead, we'll share with you unique insights and tactics from some of today's most accomplished and inspiring entrepreneurs.
Sean, great to chat with you today. Delighted to be with you.
Nice to meet you, RJ.
So there's a lot of places we could start from. Maybe perhaps the most interesting is the category you chose to be an entrepreneur in. And it is a, I'd say, very competitive category to be in the water space. Of course, you're taking a unique twist to it, and you have a combination of hardware as well as a novel product. So tell us about how you came up with the idea for Bevy.
Sure. It is an unusual category, and I probably wouldn't have believed you if even in college, you told me that I'd spent 10 years in the beverage industry. I co-founded Bevy with Eliza, my co-founder who runs design here. And the idea for Bevy really comes from Eliza primarily. She was particularly motivated to take on single-use plastic bottles as an environmental initiative, more so than as a company. And I had spent 3 years working in an environmental nonprofit. I was looking to move from a nonprofit to a sort of sustainability-focused corporation when I went to business school. And then I met Eliza while in business school. And we essentially started with this mission. Like, we started from this position of how do we get rid of the insane amount of single-use plastics and single-use packaging that we consume in the beverage industry today. And we started with that goal and then kind of worked backwards into the idea of a beverage machine that would offer like a wide variety of high-quality beverages on demand without the single-use container. And then we kind of came up with a product market focus and with a business model as a result of that. But we really started with the mission and worked backwards to the company.
That's phenomenal. And I'm sure there's a generation of folks that are very mission-driven. They want to help solve problems in the world, but there's not many ways in which they can do that. And to your point, you were trying to figure out if you could go corporate with it, but in effect, you ended up creating your own thing, which would presumably even have more impact. The design is phenomenal. I think it's so cool. Tell us about the adoption. Who's using the Bevy machine?
So we went to market focused purely B2B, which is a very unusual way to start for a beverage company. Some of that is based on the competition. Like you mentioned that it's a really tough category to compete in, right? And I'd say some of the world's most famous brands operate in this industry, right? Like Coca-Cola is an incredibly strong brand. Pepsi is an incredibly strong brand. Nestle has a powerful brand portfolio too. So it's a little crazy to throw yourself into it, but it seemed the least crazy to focus on the market, the specific market that they operate in the least. And I'd say that the big beverage companies tend to have very strong consumer-oriented brands, but tend to be a little weaker in commercial environments, and in particular in corporate environments. And we decided to start where other brands were weakest. And we started in the office with the goal of replacing the regular office water cooler plus all of the single-use plastic water bottles, all of the aluminum cans for sparkling and flavored water, which many companies offer for free to their employees. And we started there because we found the office was just an open playing field. Like, there were water cooler companies that are really big businesses, like some of them doing literally almost $1 billion in annual revenue, but that had essentially no meaningful brand name. Like, the actual users didn't care about them. We also saw companies just spending so much money on single-use bottles and on all of these cans of seltzer that we knew we had a really good opportunity to compete there. So we picked the B2B market to start. We sell to a pretty wide variety of corporations today. So I would say, like, if you take out your iPhone, most of the apps on your iPhone are probably Bevy customers. So a lot of technology companies. But as time has gone on, we're also selling more and more into financial services companies, consulting firms, like the big accounting firms, as well as outside of offices. We're selling to a lot of hotels, gyms, schools, like pretty much any commercial location where people would otherwise go through a lot of water bottles.
Yeah, the first thing I did when I was on your site and I was looking at the different products you had was I was like, do they have a B2C version? Because I would buy this because, you know, like just today alone, I've had three different beverages and I actually did an electrolyte packet. And then I saw you had that option. So it's brilliant. You can have like different flavors. You can have different levels of carbonation. You can have the electrolytes. Is B2C in the future?
B2C is in the future. It's a ways out. So the way that our product roadmap works is we started in commercial because largely for the reason I mentioned that that was just where the big beverage companies had the least foothold. We also started in the category of filtered, flavored, sparkling, and enhanced water. Like, we started in this kind of water and water variants category, also because brand loyalty isn't that strong in the water category. Like, brand loyalty is much stronger for sodas. People tend to be much more diehard about like either Coke or Pepsi than they do about, am I drinking like LaCroix or Waterloo or Polar Seltzer? That's at least in my experience. Like, in my experience, the brand loyalty is not the same. So we thought it would make the most sense to focus on building a really great brand, as well as focusing most importantly on building a great product in this category in which competition wasn't quite as daunting. But the plan is to gradually move into other categories. So another benefit of offices, by the way, is one machine gets used by a large number of people. So like in terms of pure marketing value of like getting the brand out there, each machine gets much more exposure and builds more like word of mouth marketing and builds more brand awareness than we'd get in the home. But ultimately, we plan to work our way towards smaller and smaller locations until we have a consumer product too. And then on the beverage side, there are pretty interesting opportunities to expand into different categories too. And to be honest, I candidly don't know yet what order we're going to do that in terms of like what category of beverage comes next. But the way I view it is like, if we're serious about the mission to eliminate single-use bottles, we eventually have to do that beyond just water. Like, we have to look at other single-use bottles people are consuming and find some good product that meets their needs and kind of gives them the ability to replace that bottle with a more sustainable alternative.
It's kind of fun sometimes to brainstorm on what else you could do. Would you ever enter the coffee space?
We debate coffee internally. I don't want to say no, because like, I do think there's something there. And I think our team, like honestly, our team is probably, I'm going to say the best equipped team in the world to design a great coffee machine. Like, I think we would kill it if we did it. I worry a little bit about it from a mission perspective, just because primarily people don't drink their coffee, I don't think, in single-use packaging. Like, I think they're mainly getting it from, at least in commercial settings, I think they're mainly getting it in reusable cups.
But it's a K-cup thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. There is opportunity to make it more sustainable, but I think we'd have a bigger sustainability impact in certain other categories.
Got it. I'd like to switch gears a little bit because everyone, like a lot of people from the outside, view being an entrepreneur as a very kind of exciting thing. It's a very upbeat thing, and the outcome is multi-layered rewards. But the reality is it's very difficult, and there's day-to-day challenges. There's ups and downs. Can you tell us about kind of some of those biggest challenges you've had along the way?
Yeah, it's a huge grind. It really is a grind. Like, I feel like I've yet to meet an entrepreneur who in private really loves the job day to day. I think in public, a lot of people will highlight the benefits of it. And there are really cool things about it. Like, it's fun to be able to give people jobs and build their careers. It's fun to raise money. It's fun to like design products. So there are a lot of benefits, but everyone I talk to, I don't know, I'm friends with a lot of entrepreneurs, and I feel like all of us are super stressed out. There's always something or multiple things we're miserable about. All of us have terrible work-life balance. For us, there are day-to-day hard things. And then we did also go through like a legitimate existential crisis. The existential crisis for us was COVID in 2020, when we went from true hypergrowth of more than doubling, like at a minimum doubling year over year. Literally, we couldn't build machines fast enough. Like, we were running out of machines at our factory and focused on expanding production. We went from that in 1 month to having our entire market shut down when offices closed. And at that time, more than 90% of our customers were offices. And the ability to grow and the ability even to retain customers became very threatened. And we had to severely cut costs. We had to, unfortunately, lay off half the team. It was this like brutal grind to both accept the initial shock and then act on it, and then spend over a year kind of working our way out of the hole and just focused on surviving. So that was really brutal. And honestly, I was pretty miserable the whole year. But I would say even when things are going well, and I think most companies have some existential crisis like that at some point in their history, like something happens and they have to either weather the storm, adapt, like pivot, they have to do something to get through it. In our case, the challenge was much more one of weathering the storm than a pivot, but it was still very difficult. And we still had to like keep working hard throughout all that, which it's a little harder for the whole team, I think, to put in the necessary hours to succeed and to really like embrace the startup struggle. It's a little harder when you're really unsure of whether the outcome will be positive. Like when you see your whole market in decline, it's difficult to do that. But anyway, we got through that. And then I'd say outside of that kind of particular existential period, even when things are going really well and like growth is good, customers are happy, the product's performing well, even then, it's still super hard because scaling brings so many difficulties and so many sources of stress. Like the nature of the work keeps changing, like for the CEO, for sure, like the nature of the job changes, but I'd say it applies to many people in the org, like essentially for almost anyone in any role. As the company scales, their job changes. And for the most part, actually, it's an act of the job function narrowing. Like it's usually like the job started out much more general. And then as you grow and add people, the jobs get more specific. And I'd say not everyone adapts well to that. And it can lead to discontent or just to performance issues where maybe someone was great in a more general role, but struggles to adapt to a more specialized role as the company grows. Essentially, even the good times lead to this constant state of stress where everything's always changing. And you're always basically catching up to try to learn the skills you need to get to the next level.
You know, there's this concept of life being satisfying. And, you know, some people think that it's satisfying when you are facing challenges along the way, and then you surmount those challenges and you reach the summit, and that gives you great satisfaction. And it's hard, right? The climb up the mountain is really hard, but in the end, it's worth it. Do you view kind of entrepreneurship that way? Or do you think that it's just, man, this is stressful?
I would love to say that I view it in that way. And yeah, I think that might be the case really at the end of the journey. If it's either an acquisition or an IPO that really enables like a break. Like I think if there's really an opportunity to pause work and say, okay, we did it. Like, we accomplished this goal. That would be true. I felt like that, I think, for extremely brief periods of time, like sometimes after a fundraise. But to be honest, usually when we accomplish something big, my personal sentiment is more one of relief than one of excitement. Like, usually rather than being proud of what we've done and like feeling accomplished, it's more just like, oh my God, I'm glad that was over. Like it's more this sense of relief. And I think this could be a personality flaw of some sort, right? It's this like perpetual dissatisfaction. But to be honest, that's how I really feel. There's always something I'm unhappy about. And I want to just like get on to the next problem. But I don't think that's a good thing. Like actually, I get feedback from my team, and I've gotten feedback from other entrepreneurs too, that I need to celebrate the wins more. And I do think there are entrepreneurs that are really good at this. They're good at like pushing toward big goals, but then actually taking a moment to pause, celebrate the wins, regroup, and then look to the next mountain or the next challenge. I need to get a little better at that.
Well, you're clearly an achiever. I noticed you went to Princeton. I live in Princeton, and nice. There's a lot of Princeton grads around here who've stayed and had families. Do you think that you were inclined to be an entrepreneur when you were younger, or did you show signs of being an entrepreneur, or was it sort of serendipitous when you met your co-founder?
I was pretty interested in it on and off throughout my life, but I would say not consistently. So I was actually interested in entrepreneurship at a young age. Both my grandfathers were, I'd say, very entrepreneurial. My uncle and aunt co-founded a company together, which they ran for decades. So there is a fair amount of maybe like entrepreneurial blood or influence in the family. And the idea always appealed to me, which I don't know if it's because I have an authority problem, but the idea always appealed to me. When I went to business school, I'd say I was like 90% sure I would go into entrepreneurship. I wasn't 100%. There were some students in business school who never even interviewed with any company and never even went to an info session. Like, basically, they said, I'm 100% committed. I have zero interest in learning about consulting or banking. For me, I actually was interested in learning about some of those other fields, and I did explore other paths, but entrepreneurship was too compelling.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the key is to being a good entrepreneur, if we had to boil it down to one thing?
One of the things that's been so interesting for me to see is how so many different personality types can be successful. It was actually really eye-opening. We did the Techstars Accelerator program in 2014. And as part of that program, we got to meet a lot of former entrepreneurs who had, in many cases, been successful. And seeing all the different personalities was really surprising to me, because I envisioned all entrepreneurs kind of like essentially like the Steve Jobs mindset of super visionary, super exciting, like amazing public speakers, really confident. And I met some really, for example, like incredibly shy entrepreneurs, which was a surprise to me. And these guys are like multimillionaires who, you know, have sold businesses, but they were really shy. And it was interesting to see like, oh, that's a personality type that can succeed. And then there were also like very brash, sometimes brash, even to the point of rude entrepreneurs, and then really polite ones. So there was this whole like spectrum of personality types and skill sets. I do think almost like falling in love with the problem is really important. Like, it's another way perhaps to describe persistence, right? It's like really caring about the problem you're trying to solve to the point that you're just willing to spend so much more time studying this problem, understanding it, thinking about potential solutions than others are. I think that's very important. So it's this kind of combination of persistence, but also like willingness to adapt. And to be honest, I realize it sounds like a contradiction, but I think somehow that balance of insane persistence about solving a particular problem, but willingness to like try different solutions and willingness to recognize if your intended solution doesn't work and needs to be changed. I think that's probably something that the great entrepreneurs I've met have in common.
When you're looking to expand your team and you're in the hiring and recruiting process, what traits do you look for most For example, what would the candidate have to look like or have to demonstrate for you to immediately say, yes, that's the one, we're bringing them in?
First and foremost, especially if it's a senior role, these days I'm primarily hiring senior roles. I look for real functional expertise and I look for scaling experience. Like I look for people that have been through a similar stage of growth to where we currently are in. Like I look for some ability to handle the rapid amount of change that's constantly taking place. And then beyond that, I'd say I really look for an ownership mindset and someone that does not swim in their own lane. So like an example of how I'd look for that is if we're recruiting for a sales leader, I'll ask them a lot of questions about marketing. And I want to know that they have a good understanding of like where their leads are coming from, what tactics the marketing team's using to get their leads, rather than just say like, oh, well, marketing gives us these leads and our job is to sell them. I'll also, for example, if it's a engineering leader, I would look for like really strong awareness of like how customers are using their products today and really strong awareness of their business model and unit economics and areas that maybe in like a larger, more established or in a more stodgy org, they wouldn't get involved in. So I look for leaders that like want to get involved in all the other departments and basically take the attitude of, first of all, wanting the whole business to succeed, but second of all, working as needed in any area of the business to achieve their goals.
What's the best business advice you've ever been given?
I think a big one for business strategy is to stay focused on your customers and not on the competition. Like there's kind of always this boogeyman threat that the competition is going to come, but it's much more important rather than like worrying about what competitors are doing and how we're going to react to that. It's much more important to just stay laser focused on like what our customers want and like what are they asking for? Because unless there's reason to believe that the competition is right and has a better understanding of what your customers want than you do, then it's almost irrelevant.
Got it. We're coming up on time. I do have two final questions. One is, can you tell us about a person who has had a profound influence on you?
I'm going to feel bad if everyone says this because it's probably not original, but definitely my mom has had a big influence on me. Like she's extremely hardworking. She was sort of like a super mom in a time period when she had to go to the office 5 days a week, do a long commute from New Jersey to New York, and then still come home and still spend a lot of time with the kids and basically like full-time work plus full-time mom somehow. So I think her work ethic was very inspiring for me. And in some ways, now I'm expanding, but her dad also was really impressive too, in the sense of he shared that kind of intense work ethic almost to a fault, but was also very much of like a risk taker. So I think, yeah, my mom.
Excellent. Last question. Can you tell us about a charity cause or other endeavor that you're passionate about?
I'm honestly really passionate about single-use plastics. This sounds probably obvious or trite given what our business does, but we picked single-use plastics as the focus of Bevy, not just because it's like such a well-known problem, but because the beverage industry really does contribute more to plastic waste than probably any other industry. Like if you look at the top plastic polluters globally across all companies, Coke, Pepsi, and Nestle are at the top of the list. So we knew that if we wanted to make an impact on single-use plastics, the beverage industry was the right place to start. But it's more broadly, I care a lot about environmental conservation and like species conservation.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. When your personal and professional mission and the business all are kind of rolled into one, you know, what more can you ask for? Sean, want to thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today. I know our audience will find this very insightful.
Awesome. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, RJ.